Welcome to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari Shrike, the artist and creator behind Not Sorry Art. I'm so excited to talk art and creativity with you, so grab a drink, grab a snack, and let's dive in. I also wanted to say that today's episode is sponsored by my book. I have a book coming out. I'm so proud of this, guys. The links are already up. I'll have them in the show notes. But the book is called Modern Still Life, From Fruit Bowls to Disco Balls. It is my take on a step-by-step painting book. I am really excited about it. Not only does it have like motivational tips and tricks to keep you going in your practice, but it also has clear and beautiful and full color breakdowns of the step-by-step process in my paintings. So I could not be more excited about it. If you wanted to check it out, pre-order it. It would help me more than you even know. Hey y'all, welcome back to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari. Thanks for being here. I'm really excited for today's episode as I chat with my friend and fellow artist, Ella Nilsson. Ella is a great example of an artist wearing multiple hats, as she not only has her art practice, but she also owns and operates a gallery and worked 15 years at IKEA as a design manager. That experience has made Ella an expert on making the most out of a space, and in this conversation, we discussed how artists can maximize their studio, whether it's big, small, a tiny corner, or maybe even they convert their dining room to a studio at night. Ella talks about her gallery in Central Austin, Hangar Art Studio, and what it's like for her converting a funky 80s space into a functional gallery for shows and an art studio space. Of course, you can follow Ella on Instagram at handybitches. We talk about this in the episode too. Or visit her website, handybitches.com. Also, you can check out her work, and some of mine actually, at Hangar Studio, located at 3625 Manshack Road, Suite 101 in Austin. I'll be sure to link to the website here. And speaking of links, I have made a blog post for this podcast episode where I briefly go through the talking points on how to navigate a studio space with links to a lot of the products that we talk about in this episode, if you'd like to check that out. All that to say, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I enjoyed creating it for y'all. And as always, happy creating. Hi, Ella. Welcome. Thank you for being on my podcast. We have been buddies for a long time. I think we met, oh my gosh, years ago. There was like a Galentine's pop-up, and I've kind of been obsessed with your artwork ever since. Like many artists, you are very multifaceted. You have one hand in the interior design world. You work for IKEA. You also have a gallery, an amazing gallery in Central Austin. So we're going to touch on all of that. But before we dive in, can you give me a quick introduction, who you are and how you ended up kind of wearing so many multiple hats?
That's a great question. And I've often wondered this myself. I think anything, like especially being creatives, right, you're kind of like always chasing that next creative venture. And so I've since left IKEA, but I worked for them for 15 years, finally retiring as their communication interior design manager. And it all happened because I was buying my boyfriend at the time a Valentine's Day chair in New Jersey at an IKEA there, and I saw like a tool cart. And I was like, that seems like it would be a fun job, you know, like making the room, and then like moved to Arizona. And then the kind of the rest was history. They were opening up IKEA then. And I had multiple jobs with them throughout the years, started in kitchen design, and then visual merchandising, and then interior design manager. And then it just kind of kept going from there. My formal background is I have a degree in fine art and also criminal justice pre-law. But I think there, and I know those couldn't sound more different.
Glad you addressed that.
Right, yeah. And I think at the time I got a lot of jokes of like, oh, you're going to be in the courtroom and like sketching people.
Right, right.
And then I thought to myself, like, what a waste of a law degree to then be, you know, but anyway. I told you I tangent a lot.
I love it. No, it's awesome. But I'm glad you tied those two together, because I was like, yeah, what is the overlap of those two interests?
I think it's predominantly problem solving is what, you know, it makes me feel fulfilled. And I think design, people think a lot of it is what it looks like, but it all distills down to how it functions, right? Because you can have a beautiful space, but if it doesn't work for you, or if you're coming home every day and there's no place to put your keys or your bag, or, you know, kids' shoes are a mess, whatever the case may be, Design is really about solving for a problem, and then the end result should be beautiful, but I think the function aspect of it is key. So I think that that's what inspires me. Like, if there's a need to solve, and predominantly I think artists are always struggling with a small space.
Absolutely.
It's amazing, kind of like when you have a space that you carve out. Like when I moved my studio down to Hanger, I was like, where did I have all this stuff? Right. It was like under beds, like shoved in closets. There would be like a gap like this big, and I'd be like, oh, good, I can fit canvases in there.
Everyone's nodding their head to that. Storing them everywhere.
It was like I couldn't even believe how much I fit in there. But yeah, that's, I think, what inspires me. It's creative problem solving. And I think being an artist, you're always creative. And then that's kind of the marriage of those two things.
I love it. Beautifully put. And yes, I couldn't agree more. I'm shaking my head vigorously because I always tell my students whenever I teach that you are problem solvers more than artists. You know, the word artist can be kind of loaded, especially for students, and like, at what point do you become an artist? And, you know, I steer away from that. And I always tell them, like, at your core, you're a problem solver. And I feel like not only was that beautifully said, but it really encapsulates what you do. Before we jump into studio space advice, because I know people are excited about that, I want to talk a little bit about how that background informs your artwork. So I'm going to link to Ella's artwork in the show notes. You can check it out and look at it if you're listening to it as a podcast. If you are watching this as a video, you can see some of it in the background. And it is very beautiful, very detailed. Her work has like wood finish kind of popping through. You use those elements for skin. You play with color and value. And there's a ton of accuracy to your work. Can you explain a little bit about how that maybe relates, or does it, to sort of your background and how those things kind of feed each other?
I think, and you and I have talked about this before, just about how artwork always kind of betrays your subconscious. Mm. And if you look at my artwork and I told you, maybe that I'm not a control freak, but I have control freak tendencies, you'd look at my art and be like, checks out, right? Like, that tracks. And I think it is, I would love to be more painterly just because I think it would take a lot less time. But I just can't deny myself the
And I would push back on it. It's not control freak, but maybe it's just very precise and accurate, well observed. I mean, when I think of your work, I don't think control freak. I think of super intentionality, laser focus. And I think you do it. I will say, like, there's this kind of thing where people sort of assume that if it's really detailed, you know, that you're kind of following a map, or that it's like, but I think it involves a ton of like attention and care to be able to paint like that and still have it feel like artistic and not like something that you've seen before. And so I think on multiple ways, you're definitely, like, gave back to our word, kind of problem solving through with your artwork.
Well, thanks. I think, and working on wood, definitely, you know, it's far less forgiving. If you make a mistake on something that you wanted to remain wood, there's like no fixing it. You can kind of sand it sometimes, varying degrees of success in that. But yeah, I mean, I think working with the wood grain, it goes along with that problem solving, or seeing a piece of wood, looking at the grain, and then wondering how the composition could work to help accentuate the features of a face, let's say. But yeah, I think it's all related, right? Like, if you were trying to like parse out, like, there's more overlap in your personality, what inspires you, than there are things that are diverging. So yes, I would put that problem solving and checking a lot of boxes, especially if you do make a mistake. How do you then incorporate it into the composition so that it feels intentional versus, you know, the sore thumb kind of
look to it? I wanted to ask you another question because I know people are always curious. I think anytime I have an artist on, especially an artist who has or has had like a more traditional job, can you talk us through, if you don't mind sharing, sort of what it was like to kind of switch between your 9-to-5, you know, with IKEA and this job, and sort of how you balance those two and what that process was for you specifically?
And I think artwork can kind of take as much time as you need it to. Mm-hmm. If you want to suffer all the details and work on something for weeks and weeks, you could totally stretch it out and make that happen. But I think that the key was always just finding a routine. Lots of times I would go into work like 6 to 2, 6 a.m. to 2. Then you're kind
Wow.
of capitalizing on the store being empty and you can paint or do whatever displays you need to. So I think that's part of it is just finding a routine and that even if it's 15 minutes, 20 minutes, I mean, it still counts.
Yeah.
And I think don't discredit those moments to sneak away for yourself because if you're inspired to create, then doing that makes you a better person, even if it's not like, I sat there for 8 hours and watched cat videos on TikTok for half of it. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, you're definitely calling people out, myself included on that
no,
one. So
I'm
I
worst offender.
love that. Yeah, there's so much power in a few minutes. And I will say, to kind of just jump on what you said. I mean, I am very fortunate. I'm a full-time artist. I, juggle a few different hats, but I have like a full studio and I get time for my artwork. And even still, on my most productive days, unless I really have a tight deadline, I really am only painting, like actively mixing and painting for maybe at most 4 or 5 hours a day. Like it's
Yeah.
hard. Sometimes you think when you switch over to being a full-time artist, and that's different for everyone, that you're going to be painting for 8 hours a day. And I find that I've not yet met someone where that's the case. You're
Right.
usually doing your admin stuff or all kinds of
Of
other
course. Yeah,
things.
yeah. Oh, but what I think is like super fascinating about that is just you really benefit from fresh eyes too. So it's even if you could paint 8 hours a day, right? Something you just need to take a break from it, come back, and then you'll see something maybe that needs to be worked more or is not as you intended it to be. So having short bursts, I think, can sometimes be more productive.
Yeah, absolutely. And it fits into everyone's day just a little bit better. But I wanted to
Yes.
talk a little bit about studio spaces because I know because I've had people ask me this, studio spaces, let's talk about it. For me to give a little bit of background, I'm passionate less from like I have skill in this arena standpoint and more from a I started with a very humble studio space and now have like a full backyard studio. So I've really run the gamut. My first studio space was a yoga mat. I rolled out a yoga mat. I had a little basket of my watercolors. And every time I would put the baby down to go sleep, I would take those. I would make myself paint, to your point earlier, even just 20 minutes. And then I would roll it back up, put it in the corner. And that was my studio. And then it was a corner of my room with a baby gate around it. Hung my painting on the wall and just painted on there, probably ruined my security deposit. And then eventually it was a spare bedroom, which was like, it felt like I had arrived at that point, like
Yeah.
being able to shut a door, like get out of here. And
Yeah.
then now I have my own backyard studio. So I've really progressed up. And I will say it is nice to have the space and it definitely helps. But I also know that if you're really intentional with your space, and this is something I've learned from you can kind of make the most out of anything. So I'm curious to hear kind of your philosophy on this of like how to best utilize space if someone's wanting to maybe up level their space or they're wanting to make that commitment of having a space.
Yeah, absolutely. I think of course, it would depend a lot on your medium, right? But I think the starting point is the place of like non-negotiables, right? So part of that, I paint, don't tell anybody. I mean, this is on a podcast. I
Yeah.
paint flat a lot. My neck is not happy about it, but I do. So I need like a big work surface, like a desk that I have. Also, for me, I also paint on an easel, like I'm supposed
Yeah.
to. And my neck is happy about that one.
And
So
back
I
and
think,
shoulders and everything.
right. I think, but those are kind of like the starting point, right? And then you can sit there and say, okay, what else do I need? You need storage. If you work with oil, maybe you need a drying rack or somewhere to have something to dry. I think it's always helpful to think kind of about the footprint of the space that you're going to need, especially if you're carving it out in your home. And then how much of that needs to be dedicated 100%? Like I have a mat cutter in here, I varnish flat. I can use my desk for that. So multi-purpose things too for those things that don't require 100% dedication. Like for example, too, my easel is also one of those that will go
Oh, lie
flat.
flat. Oh,
So
okay.
I can kind of put it in that configuration when I need it to do that so that I can varnish and let it dry, however many coats, and then it can kind of go back to the other thing I need it to be.
Okay.
So I think the first thing is just kind of deciding your non-negotiables because it doing that also helps you to problem solve within the framework you're given.
Right.
especially like with design, if someone says, design me a kitchen, money's no object, you're like, well, where do I even start? But if someone says, I need to see eight people, I need to have, you know, two dishwashers, whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. right? Giving those restrictions forces you to be creative with the outcome. So I think getting that must list first is kind of your best starting point. And then looking at it from a supply perspective, how big are things that I need to store? Do I have a place dedicated for something that would fit that? And again, double duty, the more that you can find things that, for example, like my mat cutter, I have saw horses that fold up to like this big, not much bigger than a roll of paper, right?
Yeah.
But it's great because if I'm doing something with a mat cutter, I can pop those out, have it at like an appropriate height to not jack up my back, and then put them away too when you need it. And then I think the third thing is, what do you need out and what do you need stored away? Mm-hmm. If it is an art supply and it is used frequently, I need to have it out. Otherwise, I will forget it exists. And then whatever systems kind of work best for you, like most of my colored pencils are label and paint sort by warm, cool, and neutral. I don't know if that is the most productive for people, but that's the...
That's great. An adage I give sometimes to just throw this in there very quickly is I have students whenever I teach who will, when they lay out their paints, they'll lay them out kind of random or as they need it. And I always tell them, like, when you're typing on a computer, you wouldn't rearrange your letters every day. You would have them consistent so that you can have one less thing to think about. And so I think that this is applicable with what you were just saying of like having it out, having it visible, having it consistent, like some order, even if you're not a type A. And I will say I'm not a type A, but as an artist, like, you will end up buying Thalo Blue 800 times if you don't physically have it out in front of you.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's 100% my problem exactly too. And then I think kind of after you can kind of parse out all that, look at like the architectural features in your room. Like, for example, and I can pan over here for those looking online, I have this weird niche in my studio here. It's like 24 inches wide, all the way to the ceiling height, and maybe 7 inches deep, right?
Yeah.
So I think if you're stuck with something, the key is to make it functional, right? If you make it a feature, then it looks like you intended it for to be that way, right? So I'm not going to be able to move this portion of the wall or anything like that, but then how can I find things that work within that space to be able to make it usable space, as before it just is kind of like, well, what would you do with that kind of thing?
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I really like seeing the corner, and I've of course been in your studio and in your gallery, and it's all like, it is one of those interesting little like 1980s buildings with like lots of nooks and little like great light, but lots of little spaces. And I feel like you've done such a masterful job like making use of all those spaces. If you don't mind, I'm going to walk you through probably a few like case studies. And if you could kind of just give me any thoughts or insights that come to mind with each of these. I'm going to start pretty restricted and then we'll move up a little bit. So if somebody is, you know, they really don't have space in their home, they don't have a dedicated space, and they work at their dining room table in the evening, so they have one of those really collapsible spaces. Are there any products or insights that you would think that might help that person use that flex space a little bit better?
Yeah, absolutely. I think rolling carts are always, they make them as petite as you would need, like down to 12 by maybe 15. Wow. But I think if your studio is somewhere like your dining table, mm-hmm. you need it to serve other functions, mm-hmm. have something that you can bring your art studio to the table. And so I think wheels, I think storage, I think having everything out, and then it's easy enough to kind of either tuck in a corner or in a hall closet or, you know, camouflage it somewhere, but then it's something that rolls in and rolls out. If it's something where you had to like carry crates, you're probably not going to be apt to bring everything with you because it's a pain in the neck. So I think about how you're using it and what functions like casters exist out there to make your life easy.
Yeah,
I think
I
that
love
would.
that. I think, and it's so funny you mentioned the little rolly cart because I've thought of like this meme for a long time of like no matter how different like all of our, practices are from, New York artists to like, someone in the middle of nowhere, that we all have that rolly cart like somewhere in
Yes.
our studio. Like it's the
Yeah.
unifying like factor with all of us because even now I have this like lovely space. Like I have multiple rolly carts because it's
Yeah.
so handy and like rolling it. And you're so right about that's such a good insight about like if it's in a basket, you're going to be so much less likely to bring it out. I always call it friction. So like whenever you have, for me, it's always a messy studio. It's like the best thing I can do for myself is just clean up before I go to bed. Because even though I love painting and I feel like I'm a motivated person, if I have that little extra bit of resistance, like I'm always shocked how much it makes me not want to paint. And I love
Yeah.
painting. So that's
Yeah.
such a
Yeah.
good point to bring up.
And clearly there's longevity too. So like even if you're just starting with a cart at the dining table, you can take that cart with you.
Exactly,
Bonus.
all the way to the big studio.
Yes. And
Perfect.
then bonus points on the cart if the shelves within it are height adjustable, because oftentimes you'll have this, 10-inch gap or 12-inch gap, and maybe everything that needs to go on that shelf is only 5 inches. So it's not just about like footprint, like how much space does it take up on the ground, but then also thinking vertically for how you can kind of leverage all the spaces in between based on the height of the objects that you're storing.
Oh, that's so good. Adjustable height. I love that. Yes. Okay. Our next person. This is someone who they don't have to pull it out all the time, but they just have a corner of a room. So let's say they have a family room and there's a TV in it. Maybe the kids play in it sometimes. But when the kids are napping, they have this corner. Like, what would you recommend for someone? Maybe the lighting isn't so great in this particular situation. What would you advise for this person for their space?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think again, if it's in a corner, you maybe want to be able to tuck it away at the end of the day, so you don't have to look at it. Like a folding screen, and then bonus points if said folding screen has pegboard on it. Because then on the outside it can be clean, but on the inside you can kind of hang everything close at hand to where you would need it. Battery operated or even plug-in clamp lighting is super helpful, especially in this instance where, one day you could be working on something that's 8 by 10, but then the next day you're working on something that's 3 foot by 4 foot. And the flexibility that you can get in clamp lighting is that you can put it where you need it based on what you're painting. And of course, we still have the rolly cart left over from last. And now
Yes,
the
it's made it with us.
rolly cart conveys. But yeah, something to partition it off. And then, you have flexibility with that. They even make like shelves that go into pegboard. But yeah, I think that would be my suggestion. And that way, it's kind of opening the door to the office, so to speak, and then helping yourself get in the mindset of, okay, this is what I come here to do. Everything's right at hand where I need it.
I love that. I love that you mentioned having like the new mindset in the space because, like, functionally, that might seem like, kind of this extra embellishment. But man, there's nothing like even being in an IKEA that proves how important that is. Cause like you'll be in this building where it's like a huge warehouse, but you go into one of these little coves of these like cozy little small bedrooms. And like even though there's like a whole wall missing, you still feel like you're in a whole different space. So that's really a testament.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Okay, I love that. So our next person, we have two more people left. This person has finally upgraded. They've taken their wheelie cart with them to a spare bedroom. It's small, it's carpeted, it's not very aesthetic. Let's say that this person now has a little more space and they have decent lighting, but they're wanting to make their space more aesthetic for social media. Maybe it's not very aesthetic right now. Like anything, like not only space-wise, but I'm throwing an extra thing at you right now, but also to make it look a little nicer for photos. Is there anything that person should be considering?
I think it would just be, and I hate the word propping because it makes it sound like it doesn't have a function, right? But just think of it more in terms of grouping like items together. And so that way it kind of looks a little bit cleaner. You have all your canvases together, you have all your paint together, all your brushes together. And I think if we think about like a commercial kitchen, right? Everything's out. Nobody's opening a door to like get a pan, right? Because they got orders coming in and everything's moving really quickly in this hypothetical example. But I think the same is kind of true for that. Hide away what isn't aesthetically pleasing, in cl like behind closed doors, or add doors to open shelving so that you don't see it, or even, roller blinds are a great option because they're flat. I feel like sometimes curtains kind of when they fold up as you're opening and you're drawing the curtains and closing the curtains, that can still take up some space, but at least the rolly blind is flatter. So that's a inexpensive option as well. But yeah, that would be the first thing to kind of think about that. And I think honestly, protecting the walls, like I know you have a drop cloth up all the time, and your drop cloth becomes part of the aesthetic. And I think that just having that plus like tidy art supplies really kind of can go a long way in terms of making things look a little bit more presentable on camera.
I love that. That's such good advice. I know that there are people, and I will say I'll create a list of a lot of the products that you listed so someone afterwards can go and look up these things. On the note of something looking aesthetic, I will also add on my two cents. You would be amazed what good light and just like bumping your exposure a little bit in post will do. So like even if you think it's cruddy, just get some good light on there. All of us, we all curate a little bit when we're taking photos. So just some encouragement in that arena. Okay, our final person. Now, the thought here is someone now has like they're either shopping for studio spaces, or let's say that you've really made it big, you've like blown up, and now you're building your own studio. If someone has some control over their studio space, what are some things that you would suggest for them to consider building in or looking for if that is at their disposal?
I think power is always a huge one, right? So if you can have a say where outlets go, somehow we managed to fill them all, I think, especially just with
Truly.
new technology. But yeah, I would consider outlet placement. I would consider windows and natural lighting, because even if we can supplement all day with additional lights, but there's just something nice about looking outside. Like you paint plein air all the time. It just, and I have, my easel with the view, because then I can kind of like, oh, what's the ambulance going to out there? What's going on outside? Or,
A reason to take a little break. No, I totally relate.
to have that connection to outdoors. And then again, just in terms of thinking vertically, as high of a ceiling as you can possibly get, because we all want the prime kind of eye level real estate to be reserved for art. But we all have stuff to store, right? So whether that's shelving that's super high or something up really high, especially if you don't need it on the daily, but just that's always really helpful for storing stuff is having ceiling height.
I love that. Yes. And I will say I'm a testament to the skylight. I have one. I actually put it in there because I did have the chance to have the studio built. It was really
Oh, that's
fortunate.
awesome.
I love it. And I put that up there because I sort of thought that like a skylight was like, I don't know, like a you've made it kind of marker. I was like, I don't know. I see a lot of artists with skylights. It has become one of the most functional and helpful things in my studio for multiple reasons. One, great up light. So that's the other thing you think about. Sometimes when you're a newbie and you're setting up light, you kind of set them at eye level because maybe you don't consider it. Maybe that's just a me error. But I found that the higher up your light is and the more it's like diffused, the better your light is for taking photos, for painting, for basically everything. So, like you mentioned, really good highlight. And then also when I paint really big, I can extend my easel up into it. And so it's been handy on multiple levels. And so, yes, thank you. That is so helpful and hearing all of those. Before we move to, I want to talk about your gallery because it's amazing and I can't wait to hear your thoughts on the space. But before we move on, can you give us kind of a rapid fire list of, I know your background is IKEA, but any like products that you think, whether it's IKEA or not, but that really help artists that you see in a lot of artists' studio and that someone should look into if they're wanting to invest in their studio space?
Ah, that's a great question. I think not specific to anybody, but if you do work flat a lot, I have a height adjustable desk and it makes my life super easy. There's some things that are better done at like counter height. There's some things that are better done at bar height. So I think being able to raise and lower it based on what I'm doing, and then the chair the same way too, right? If I'm not standing and working at the easel, having height adjustability kind of broad strokes, multiple uses, checks a lot of boxes for that. I think pegboard is like so unsexy and so
I
utility,
love a pegboard.
but
Yeah.
it's so functional. You can display on it. You can hang work that's like, am I done? Am I not done on it? Just in terms of organization, I think something about the grid pattern visually too is like its own aesthetic, but then in addition, limitless function in terms of that. And then I think lighting is super key too. I
Yeah.
mean, whether there's so many good options, whether it's IKEA or Amazon or anything, being able to have lighting to put it where you need it. If you can adjust color temperature or anything like that for the kind of work you do, bonus points. But yeah, I think those are kind of like the big three. Most of my furniture in my studio has come from Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
So I think being sustainable about it is always a good thing too. It doesn't necessarily have to be new,
I
but
love
just.
that. Yes, that's such good information, gold. And yes, I'm so glad you brought up the Facebook Marketplace thing. I find that painting equipment and especially easels kind of have the same life cycle as like exercise equipment. Like I always see it on Facebook. So if you are wanting to invest in an easel, just set up a Google alert, let the algorithm on Facebook Marketplace know that you're looking for one and it will feed it to you. Like just literally give yourself a month. That's all you would need. I've gotten most of my easels from like Facebook. So that's, I'm so glad you brought that up. I want to talk about your gallery. So you have Hanger Gallery. It's amazing. I've shown there. I've worked with you there. It is the cutest space. Can you tell me a little bit about your gallery? And then I also want you to tie in the name behind the gallery because I think
Oh,
it shows
yeah.
another really fun, interesting thing about you. But yes, share with us about your gallery.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're like a hybrid space. There's artist studios in here, as well as a gallery space. Ariel Austin Studios out of here, as well as Cassie Gonzalez, who does Miss Pixel Perfect or Pixel Perfect Art. So I'm very spoiled that I can just take my paintings downstairs and she can scan and print everything
I'm
for me.
jealous.
But I think the, and so in addition to that, we do kind of have rotating exhibitions. The artwork changes out every 8 weeks or so. The current exhibition is Carly Weaver. She's doing her Grackle Eclipse show. And then up next, Arielle's curating a group show. So that's pretty cool too.
Yay.
It is like the footprint, you know, it's Austin, right? Everything's pricier and pricier.
Yeah.
It's not a super huge footprint, but there's so much wall space and the light
Totally.
is really great too. And like you said, an old 80s building, no shortage of weird angles. And I think that it's more challenging to design for that than it is for, say, like a rectangular box with concrete floors.
Right. Yeah.
So that's been kind of very fun with it. But I think the biggest unintended consequence for me is just having other artists to talk to. Art can be lonely
Yeah.
because you're just by yourself in your own head, and two sides of the same coin. What makes us successful is also what we're like, am I grounded in reality right now?
Oh my
Like,
gosh,
am I,
totally. You're like
is,
reading
am I
my
just
mind.
talking to myself? But I think being able to be around other creatives and get kind of that instant feedback on things that are work in progress is super, super helpful, and rewarding, right? Like to have other people to be around that kind of are going through the same thing. Even if we're not talking, there is something about the energy there.
And you've got good ones in Cassie and Arielle. Her work is amazing. I'm going to link both of them too because they're just like rock stars in their own right. I would
They
love to have
are.
them both on the podcast. Can you tell me a little bit about the space? So I wish I could like transport all the viewers to the space because it's interesting. It's, you know, when you think gallery, you think like you mentioned, huge rectangular space with white walls. And like a fun little deep dive that I've been doing recently is I've kind of been like obsessed with like the French salon style and like the academies and just like on my own little art history tangent. But I look at all these photos of like these, you know, paintings upon paintings upon paintings on a wall and they like fill up the entire wall and how much of the contrast to what we have now. But I actually have always thought that they were kind of charming, the like multiple like how it's really, really layered. And what I
Totally.
think is really fun about your gallery is it kind of feels like a wonderful balance between the two. It's both really bright and great lighting and clean. And also there's this lovely quality of like winding up a staircase and looking at all of the art and how much care and intention you've put into curating all the little nooks and spaces. Can you tell me what it was like whenever you saw this building, the challenges, and like walk us through your problem solving process, if you can, curating
absolutely.
That space?
I think I'm personally, I'm just drawn to weird spaces anyway. Like the more weird nooks, the more hobbit holes, like doorways, all the weird, like the more I'm like, yes, because it's a design challenge to make those look intentional by giving them a function. I just happened to see it. It was a audiology practice before. And the things you can't change in a business condo were the things I liked. So that was kind of like the first win. And then the rest of it was just complementing the aesthetic of artwork, right? Like I think the more you have it on a neutral palette, like a white wall, the more it can kind of bounce the true light back onto the artwork, and you're kind of showcasing it in the best possible way. So it was paint, it was flooring, and then kind of delineating the spaces into functional spaces as opposed to one big space, kind of subdividing it so that there could be two studios in the space. Or we have the weirdest little kitchenette. I mean, the fridge does not come out if, I would have to remove the cabinets to get the fridge out
because
it's so wedged
in there permanently.
Yes. And I was like, well, maybe if I take off the doors, and I'm like, this sounds like a problem for when the fridge breaks, knock on wood, that it won't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and then just thinking of, there's this weird little nook right by our stairs. And then that made sense to kind of have point of sale because it's under the slope of the stairs. So you wouldn't want people like hitting their head on it per se.
Right.
So how can we make that kind of like a greeting point for visitors when they come in, someone to kind of explain the exhibition or what else is going on in the space? And then building that partition. We have like a wood wall partition that's slatted as a kind of a way of like slowing people down when you come in.
Right.
So how do you create like a visual stop without compromising the light that comes in through our doors and that giant, it's not a trapezoid.
Yeah. Like
I don't even know what the shape is.
But weird 80s freestyle space. Yeah. Nobody knows.
It's like a parallelogram on the top. It's like a mullet, parallelogram on the top and a rectangle.
Very 80s,
right?
Yeah, I love that. And then can you tell us a little bit more about the name Hanger?
Because
I think that's a fun story.
Okay, so happy to. If you ever want me to never stop talking, just ask me anything about commercial aviation. I love airplanes. And it was maybe something I didn't really get into until my 30s, which then made me feel good about like, oh, I can be older and still learn new things.
Yep. I love that.
But so it's born out of my love of airplanes. So there's random plane stuff kind of hidden throughout, but not like in a military museum kind of way.
No, it's very tasteful. At your core, you're an artist. It's really fun. My son, who he's 8, loved it. He's like, I want to go back to the airplane bathroom place.
Aww,
so it's like, to awesome. Him, that's what you are.
happy. That means I've done my job well.
Yes, I love it. It's such a beautiful space. So if anyone's listening, I'm going to link to Hanger Studio, but can you just tell us if someone's like local to Texas, you're located?
Absolutely. We're on Menchaca Road between Ben White and Lamar in 78704. We're open Fridays and Saturday, noon to 5, and then throughout the week by appointment if someone wants to come in. And I love it when people try and stump me with questions.
Oh.
So the more questions you have about a particular piece of artwork, the more I love to answer them.
Oh, I love that. Yes. And you always have shows. So I think it's good to get on your email list if you're wanting to see who you have up next. It's always fun to follow. And I always try to hop down there and check it out. And then the last thing, you know, if someone's listened to this episode and they are like, they're thinking about studio spaces, where do they go maybe to learn more from you or to, you know, if they want to hire you? I know your business partner who runs the gallery with you, Pamela, you guys work together. If somebody is wanting to maybe reach out to you for a consult on their studio space, is that a service you offer? How would they contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a contact form on Hanger's website. Pamela, as you mentioned, my business partner, she has her own, we started working for IKEA together, and that was really kind of where it all was born from there. So she has like a proper background in interior design, not me, which just kind of like fell into it somehow.
You're very good. You're downplaying yourself. Yeah.
Well, thank you. But you know, but yeah, so if you fill out a contact form on Hanger's website, and you can reach out to us, Pamela lives up north. So between the two of us, we kind of have the greater Austin metro covered. And Pamela can do anything from paint color consultations, you know, to as big as designing a whole new room for you. So nice. She covers a wide breadth of interior design needs.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for being on. And yeah, I know that was incredibly helpful. I am thinking I have like this big, my print room needs a makeover desperately. Uh-huh. So I'm going to go and think about everything you said. How can people reach you and your artwork? I know you mentioned the gallery, but if people want to follow you, which I definitely recommend, your Instagram handle is Handy Bitches, which is hilarious. And it also very much describes you. I feel like organically the word handy came up a lot. So good job on that. But where can they find you if people want to see more of your work and listen to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Handybitches.com and social media is handy. I mean, I try and make it easy. My friend Shannon and I were building a deck and we were joking about like, oh, well, if we had a webcam, this is like long before OnlyFans or anything.
Yeah, you we were doing it.
That if we had a webcam, it could pay for all of our home improvement projects. And so that was kind of where the name, and then, you know, you just buy the domain because it's available. And then you're like, well, I guess I should use it for something. And then yeah, you know, the rest is kind of history, but yeah.
That's hilarious. I didn't know that that was the origin. That's yeah. I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on and sharing your time with us. I know it's going to help people and inspire people. I will show note all of the things that we talked about, a lot of the materials, make sure to follow. And thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening and thank you for being here. I wanted to also encourage you guys to leave a review. The feedback is incredibly helpful. And if you leave a review, I will read your handle or your name on the following week's episode. Take care, y'all, and happy creating.